It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio. Thanks for joining us. And me, your host, David Leventhal, in what guess will be known as the Hurricane Harvey edition of Forward Nation Radio. Of course, we will start off with the news, and we'll discuss a little bit taxes in America and our rationale for a progressive tax system in light of Republican efforts to dramatically change our tax system. But of course, the big story to start with is the devastation of Hurricane Harvey along the south coast of Texas and now Louisiana. It is important at this moment, we are always reminded, to avoid making cheap political points from a tragedy affecting so many people and destroying the lives of so many. That, of course, is the province of conservatives, not liberal media. So let's not score any cheap political points on this. Let's, however, talk about how it is relevant to the things that we talk about on Forward Nation Radio and relevant to your lives, even those of you who are not suffering through it. First of all, you're familiar, I guess, for the most part, with what's been going on. I think, I put it in perspective when I read that parts of Houston have received more than 50 inches of rain. You've heard all the stories about that, more rainfall than they get in a normal year, etc. To me, what really blows my mind is to think that 50 inches of rain, had it been colder out and you'd gotten the same amount of rain, that would have translated into more than 40 feet of snow. 40 feet of snow in a few day period. Think about that. If you're living in an apartment and you're on the fourth floor, if you looked out your window, you would see nothing but snow because the snow would be over the height of your window. With all this and all the flooding that's resulted from all the rain that they've gotten, we can start out with the uplifting signs of banding together. How people do tend to come together, and maybe we see the best in America and Americans in times of national tragedy. People helping each other, people going out of their way to help. And yet, neighbors helping neighbors is clearly not going to solve this problem, is not going to solve the problem that people are going to be saddled with after this is over. And that brings us to the role of government. And Ronald Reagan, the hero of conservatives, in large part because of his famous words, his nine most terrifying words in the English language: I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. As someone who works for the government, I've said a couple of times on this show, fuck you, Reagan. He wasn't upset by it because he's dead, but how to dismiss government and government workers so derisively? Well, it plays really well in conservative America. Well, how's it playing right now in South Texas and Louisiana, I wonder? How do you like your government now? If you're in a nursing home and the water is at your chest and rising, and you hear a government boat and someone saying, I'm from FEMA and I'm here to rescue you, do you really think those are the nine most terrifying words? Those may have been more than nine words, I paraphrased. But do you think that those are the nine most terrifying words? Will this change the minds of any blind conservative who watches too much Fox News and is willing to dismiss government in its entirety? I doubt it. Might change a few. Some people might realize, hey, government actually did a pretty good job saving my life here. Government's doing a good job putting this place back together. Government's doing a good job compensating us for all, or at least for much of what we have lost. Do you think that the Texas Congress people, who were always arguing against Hurricane Sandy relief, do you think they are going to be fighting against relief for South Texas? they will at least be consistent. They will be living by their beliefs and their words. My guess is twofold. One, they will ask for as much help and as much money as they can get. And two, they will not pause for even a moment in their attacks on government, big bad government, the ones that they are relying on. I am excited that we liberals, we progressives, who understand the value of government and do a large part of the support of the value of government, are not coming out and saying, they tried to screw us, screw them. They keep speaking about the evils of government, so let's keep government away from them. At this moment, we're not trying to rack up cheap political points, although it would be nice in the long run if we actually change some minds by letting facts cloud people's judgment a little bit. So here it is, Trump's big moment. The natural disaster, not of his making. One of perhaps the first. This is a chance for Trump to benefit tremendously just from the glow of being seen to help out, to be there, maybe even to empathize, to show an interest in solving the problem. This could wipe under the rug so much of what people have hated about Trump for so long, raise his approval ratings to stratospheric levels, maybe even like 40%. Well, unfortunately, Trump's big moment is still Trump's moment. This is the time for America to unite under a decent, empathetic, thoughtful, competent leader. Anybody out there got one? Maybe Hillary Clinton. Maybe we should ask Hillary Clinton to take charge. Just for a little while, and then we can go back to the jackass. Trump came out and said that he wants to do it better than Katrina. Well, that's setting an awfully high bar. Thanks for aiming high, Don. This is the guy who was hoping to get a 300 on his SATs. I'm going to do better than I did last time. And yet, right now, he may not be even meeting that bar. And if he does meet the bar, it's clearly despite President Trump, not because of it. At a time when, I can't believe I'm going to say this, even George Bush, boy George, in the wake of tragedy, was able to stand up and put his arm around somebody, show or fake some empathy, caring for people. Famous picture with his arm around was the rescue worker at 9/11. Trump can't even manage that. Touch another human being? Oh my God, they'd have to sanitize me for hours. I know that much has been made of Melania Trump surveying the damage in high heels. And my initial response is, oh, come on. There's so much to pick on the Trumps for, really, the way she chooses to dress inappropriately and thoughtlessly. But then I think about it. I think, you know, maybe the problem here is the optics really do stand for something. They just don't get it. They don't understand what it's like to be a human being with problems that can't be solved by bankruptcy or firing people. So no empathy coming out of the Oval Office. Maybe FEMA will do a much better job. God knows it can't do worse than they did under Katrina and Michael Brown. A heck of a job, Brownie. But if that's the case, again, it's going to be despite Trump, not because of him. How many people out there right now are praying that most of the people making decisions at FEMA are the people who Trump hasn't seen fit to replace yet and are Obama holdovers? FEMA, of course, is underneath the Department of Homeland Security, currently headed by, drumroll please, nobody. But which is worse? All of the unfilled posts in our government that might be helping here? Or worse, those who are filling the ones that have been filled, and lack competence and empathy. All the things that we've been talking about, well, now they're made plain. Trump is just not up to the task. And sadly, we can expect that most of the people he's put in place are not up to the task. At least we can count on the fact that there will be an urgency, a learning in some circles of the lesson of Katrina, and there will be more of an effort to do good. And we certainly wish everybody affected by this storm the best. Trump, however, has proven over the week in more ways than this that he still cannot shut up or grow up. He is still a divisive little whiny boy. During the week, he's been warning of shutting the government down if his border wall isn't built. The Donald Trump equivalent of, I'm going to take my ball and go home if I don't get to hit cleanup and play shortstop. Ironically, it's the Republicans saying, we're going to be the voice of reason. We're not shutting down the government. We're not letting him shut down the government. Why is this ironic? Because the last several times the government shut down, it's because of these same people who are now the voices of reason saying, we're not going to let Trump shut the government down. We're relying on the previous irresponsible little children who have been bashing government their whole lives and refuse to understand the crucial role that government plays in all of our lives in so many ways to prevent President Manchild from shutting the government down because he doesn't get what he wants. During the week, he's been escalating his attack on journalists, sick people who don't like the country. It's a good time to be fanning the flames of fire in this country and hatred against journalists. Not enough of them are getting beaten up or shot in this country or around the world, I guess. As we've mentioned before on this show, his attack on journalists is really part of the bigger attack on truth and facts. That's what he's really against. That's what the Republican Party is against. Just recently, just this morning, Defense Secretary Mattis put on hold Trump's ban of transgendered people in the military. Some check on his immediate impulse to run to bigotry and to throw red meat to his rabid base. Once again, we're counting on cooler military heads in this country to calm things down because the President of the United States can't be trusted to do anything. Well, and obviously other big news during the week, speaking of discrimination, is Trump's pardon of Sheriff Joe, as he affectionately calls him, Sheriff Joe, good old boy, Sheriff Arpaio, a poster boy for what law enforcement should not be, a man who has repeatedly shown bigotry, intolerance, contempt for the law, practiced torture of often innocent people. In other words, a guy Donald Trump can really relate to. Donald Trump's kind of guy. The first thing, of course, with the pardon, we learned, before he pardoned him, he just tried to squash the case. To squash any investigation and to squash the case being brought, which ultimately was successful, against Arpaio. This is called obstruction of justice. How unusual is this? Oh, come on, stop your whining. Apparently, it didn't happen once during the Obama administration where people involved said, I can't recall a single time where Obama picked up the phone and basically told the Justice Department to get rid of a case. Nevertheless, it didn't work. He was convicted. He was convicted of contempt of court. But that's right up Trump's alley. Nobody does contempt of court better than Trump, who's been contemptuous of our courts and legal system since before he was installed as president. This illustrates Trump's respect for the judiciary and separation of powers and the United States Constitution. It is consistent with an autocrat. It is consistent with a move to fascism. No checks and balances. Neuter the journalists. Neuter the courts. Neuter anybody who could check presidential or anybody else's actions. Joe Arpaio also locked up journalists, once again endearing him to the commander-in-chief. He was an unrepentant bigot, and he is unrepentant for anything that he did such that got him convicted. Things that usually prevent someone from getting a pardon. But not in the Trump administration. So, of course, the Republican Party had no choice but to come out and vigorously condemn this action. Ah, just kidding. Got you there for a minute. Of course, the Republican Party, for the most part, has done absolutely nothing and been perfectly silent. There's been a few voices, most of them tepid. We can't anger our base. Our base are the bigots. We can't piss them off. Yes, we're kind of the second order bigots. Not the outright bigots, the more subtle bigots. That's the one we try to play to anyway, even though we have to rely on both of them. So they have to try to walk this line. Last week we talked a lot about affirmative action. What does all this say about affirmative action? Pardoning a man who shows contempt for people of browner skin than him. Do you think people of Hispanic descent get to compete on a level playing field under Sheriff Joe? Also during the week, reports have come out that black unemployment is still about twice that of whites. Not, I'm sure I don't have to tell you, my faithful listener, because blacks are inferior or less qualified, but because of discrimination, because of bigotry. In fact, studies have indicated that being black is akin to having a felony conviction on your record when it comes to getting a job. That white people with the same qualifications as black people, except with a felony conviction for, let's say, intent to sell cocaine, are more likely to get jobs than the black people they might be competing with. Also during the week, a study indicating that blacks and Latinos are more underrepresented in U.S. colleges even than they were 35 years ago. Despite years of affirmative action trying to help them. Again, not because they are less qualified, but because they face obstacles that white people don't tend to face. And because of the Trump administration, because of Charlottesville, because of his reaching out to the far right, instances of bigotry are greatly on the rise across this country. In real estate sales, in policing, and everywhere else, the bigots have come out of the closet. Let's reward them by pardoning Sheriff Joe. During the week, we found out the regional greenhouse gas initiative of 9 Northeast states, including Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New York, last week agreed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from power plants an additional 30% by 2030, on top of the 40% cut already achieved since 2009. Governor Chris Christie and New Jersey are out of the RGGI. Presumably, Chris Christie is applying for jobs. And helping to destroy the planet is a good way to get lucrative ones. The federal government won't act. States have to do it on their own. Unfortunately, states can't just do it on their own. And the race to the bottom will mean that some states are doing the right thing, and many states will still do the wrong thing, and all of us are going to suffer the consequences. But these Northeast states have decided to make the sacrifice for the good of the country and the world. Except there's no sacrifice. These states have seen 3.4% lower utility costs so far than states that haven't been reducing their emissions. They've seen greater economic growth than they've seen in states that haven't been part of the contract. And so what's Donald Trump doing? Selling more oil leases for oil and gas exploration on federal lands and federal monuments. Things that probably even aren't wanted or needed. Okay, I don't want to leave completely without Russia. More subpoenas are being issued. Lawyers are getting in the act. They're subpoenaing Manafort's lawyer. And of course, we're still waiting to see what happens with this Trump associate who works with the Russian bank that's under sanctions and shouldn't be worked with, but who is trying to get Trump a real estate deal in Russia, and who famously says his relationship with Putin will get Donald Trump elected president of the United States. Just boasting? Ridiculous? We'll find out, except for the fact that something got this jackass to be president of the United States. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about taxes. The Republicans are sitting down. Their next big endeavor is to address taxes in this country. We have, historically, something known as a progressive tax system. And by progressive, what that means is that higher levels of income are taxed at higher rates than lower levels of income. Or, to put it more simply, the rich are taxed at a higher rate than the poor. The big debate in this country for many years has been about the progressiveness of the tax system, whether it should be progressive and how progressive it should be. Guess who believes that the tax system should be either less progressive or not progressive? If you guessed Republicans, you would be right. And I guess alive. So why is it, as a liberal, as a progressive, I believe in a strongly progressive tax system? Strongly progressive, far more than we've had even under Obama. So what are my arguments? As we talk about whether we should tax the rich, as we keep hearing the lament of the angry white, usually it's the poor white, but in this case the wealthy white, are also playing the victimology card. We're victimized. It sucks to be rich and white in America, the double whammy. So what is the rationale for the progressive tax system? Why should we be taxing higher levels of income at a higher rate? Why should we be taking more money from the rich? Or, to borrow the Fox News phrase, why soak the rich? Okay, here's why. The first answer is a practical one and not a very satisfactory moral one. And it is, that's where the money is. If you want to run a society, you're going to have to get to where the money is in order to fund what you need to do. Especially with the expanding, almost unprecedented income inequality in this country. Most of this country is not in a position to finance what this country needs to do. If you're going to finance bridges, railroads, tunnels, internet, education, you're going to have to go to increasingly where the money is. Okay, let's go to examples that I think make more of a moral case. First is, it's a general proposition in America. Do we feel that we have more justification for taxing what I could consider luxury money than necessity money? In other words, money that you make that is not necessary to provide the basic necessities of life for you and your family, but is instead used to get luxury products or the finer things in life, something we might all enjoy and all aspire to get some of. But would we, most of us, agree that money that you have that is used for luxury and is not necessary to feed your family and clothe your family is more justifiable in taxing than necessity money? Taking money away from your children's mouths or clothes off their back seems more problematic than making someone buy a smaller boat. By definition, at higher levels of income, more of that money is luxury money. And so the more money you have, the more it could be taxed at a higher rate because more of it's luxury. How many of you out there believe that we compete on a level playing field? No, I'm not going back to affirmative action right now. Let's leave that one aside for a moment. Let's just talk about economics. Do you think that the poor, the lower middle class, the middle class, have the same opportunities to make money that the wealthy have? Of course you don't, because that's absurd. Take a look at the Trump administration. Take a look at the Trump cabinet. At all the billionaires, many of whom are basically useless crap, but have a lot of money, were born with a lot of money, and got a lot more, starting with the president and most of his family. I don't know why I said most. Clearly, wealthier people have opportunities to make money that the rest of us don't have. They get calls from financial insiders about stocks that are liable to take off, about opportunities that the rest of us aren't invited to. They get to get into Facebook before the rest of the planet gets to get into Facebook. If we don't have the same opportunities to make money, if wealthy people have more opportunity to make money than poor people have, doesn't it make sense that they should have to pay for that? Yes, you're going to make more money because that's the way the world works, but we're going to take more of it away to provide the same types of opportunities to people who don't currently have those opportunities. There is a lack of a link between money and social utility. Do you think that the free market rewards people based upon their contributions to society and the planet? If you don't, and if you do, you are watching too much Fox News and living in a fantasy world. If you think that the people who are multimillionaires because they sit on their computers all day and make bets, or they separate old ladies from their life savings, if you think that they have as much social utility as, let's say, also in the news, the scientists who created the Voyager program to investigate the outer planets and now leave the solar system. Those scientists, I'm sure, made in a year a fraction of what someone on Wall Street makes in a month. We do not reward people based upon their contributions of society, at least the market does not. But we as a society can make decisions to shuffle some of that money around and say, well, okay, you're making a lot of money and not necessarily from doing many positive things. We're going to take some of that money and we're going to help other people succeed and do positive things. How about the people at the National Hurricane Center? How about the people working on the front lines of FEMA? How much money do they make a year? How much are they worth right now compared to someone on Wall Street? Maybe we should be funding their college loans so they can go work for FEMA or the National Hurricane Center. And maybe we should be doing that by taxing people who are making money, good for them, but not necessarily contributing to society in doing so. The wealthy have ways to avoid taxes that others do not. How many of you faithful listeners have a Swiss bank account, or even one on the Cayman Islands, Bahamas, Bermuda, Panama? The list can go on and on. And yet wealthier people do. How many of you have an expensive tax lawyer to figure out every loophole that you can have to avoid paying taxes? You don't. Donald Trump has several of them. He has ways to avoid taxes that others do not. He gets to call some of his home a home office and write his home mortgage off, or some of it, off of his taxes. I pay my own home mortgage. The taxpayer doesn't do it for me. The top 400 income earners, so to speak, paid nearly 20% of their income in federal taxes in 2012. In 1992. In 2012, it was down to less than 17%. We're not soaking the rich. A more progressive tax system will help compensate for all the money that's being hidden. The wealthy have ways to avoid spending that others do not. How many of you get to go to hockey games, playoffs, concerts on other people's dime? How many of you get to travel on other people's dime? Wealthy people figure out a way to get their companies to pay for these things. Certainly when I was a pretty high-priced lawyer, it was amazing how many perks I got that I didn't have to pay for. My firm was writing it off their taxes, but I was getting them for free. The wealthy can avoid spending money on things that the rest of us cannot avoid spending money on. The wealthy, believe it or not, get more from government. I know Fox News viewers believe that the poor are soaking all the rest of us out of money, that food stamps and welfare, which basically doesn't exist anymore, is taking all the money. But the fact is, welfare for rich people dwarfs welfare for poor people in this country. How many of you got to get the government to pay $1 billion for your new baseball stadium? Or hockey rink? Or football stadium? Or anything else? If you need an ambulance, you want to be in a wealthy area or a poor area? Who is happier to see the police show up? Wealthy people or poor people? We talked before about civil fines, criminal fines. If I get a fine for illegal parking, it takes way more of a chunk out of my income than it does for a wealthy person. The number might be the same, but as a fraction, it's nothing. It might be an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours worth of my time. It might be 3 minutes worth of his. Saudi Arabia this week, or recently, bought itself off the UN list of nations that kill or maim children. UN puts together a list of countries that kill or maim children. Last year, Saudi Arabia bought itself off that list by paying money. Poor countries don't get to do that. They're trying to do it again, by the way. And bail. If a poor person is arrested for a crime wrongly, he may sit in jail for months at least, waiting for a trial that might or might not exonerate him. Wealthy people pay a small sum in bail, at least according to their money, and they move on. Luck plays a huge role in our lives. If you have a lot of money, luck, at least financially, played a huge positive role in your life. As many people have said, including former Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, if you're very wealthy, understand that you've been lucky. And you probably have a debt to the unlucky. People who weren't born at the right time, in the right place. People who haven't had as good a health. Finally, on my last thought, if someone comes up to you and says, I have a deal I will make with you. I have a deal. I am going to ask you, when you get rich, I'm going to ask you to give a little bit more back. I'm going to ask you to give some back when you get rich. Well, what do I get for that? What I give you in return is, I'm going to make it more likely that you get rich in the first place. I am going to increase your opportunity to get wealthy. How many of you would take that deal? And the answer is, with a little bit of thought, of course you would take that deal. You worry about paying a little bit more back when you get wealthy. The key is to get wealthy in the first place. So someone comes up and says, I will help you get wealthy. Starting to sound like Rumpelstiltskin. I will help you get wealthy. Which, by the way, strikes me as having an unjust ending. But anyway, I will help you get wealthy. In return, when you get wealthy, you pay a little bit more back. That makes sense to everybody, except, you know who it doesn't make sense to? The people who get wealthy. At least the people with a lack of conscience who then say, I no longer like this deal. This deal was good for a while, but not good anymore. Anyway, that's today's show. We will have more on taxes, I believe, next week. Like looking forward, go to forwardnationradio.com. That's forwardnationradio.com and get the full experience. You'll see the video from this and every episode there and on our YouTube channel as well. Don't miss our podcast on Podbean for those of you on the go who prefer to listen, although it's not nearly as good if you don't get to look at me. But for those who prefer to listen on Podbean, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please like us on Facebook. Please share us with your friends. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for spreading the word. Forward Nation Radio. See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation. Nation Radio with David Leventhal.